So we're Paul and Tanya. We've been serving in Chuuk hospitals, well, not since 1814. The CMS made that. CMS are 200 years old next year, so that's kind of what it implies. But we've been there since 2011, January, and it's good to be home. I'll just give you a wee background of CMS. CMS, Church Mission Society, the mission of CMS is to resource, mobilize, and support the global church and to enable individuals like ourselves and like you to do mission wherever we are or where you are. And as I say, we've been serving as CMS mission partners since 2011. Just a wee background on... this thing just give up. No, there we go. Chuuk Hospital. It's a very rural place. It's 10 miles from any tarmac roads. It's 2 hours from a supermarket. We've got 375 staff, most of whom live on site. And the hospital serves a population of about 500,000. It's quite hard to get our whole experience into this time, but we're going to have a go. So, Tanya, ladies first.
So, yeah, we just want to share with you basically what we've been doing in Chuuk for the last 2.5 years and hopefully not bore you too much. So I have sort of two main roles at Chuuk, but the first one is hospitality, looking after the visitors and guests that come to the hospital. We would receive around 40 medical students every year, but we also receive a number of volunteer medical specialists. And they would come from anything for 3 days up to 6 months. In our first year, we received some very special people. But mostly what I'm working with are the students. My job is to organize their placements, which gives me a great opportunity to meet some really interesting people from all around the world. Most of the people who volunteer at Chuuk are Christians, but we actually do receive a number of volunteers who are not. So part of the outreach of the hospital isn't just to our staff and patients, but it's also to these visitors from overseas. Just as a wee example, last year one of our student nurses from Leicester in England came to me and told me a story about how they'd been working on a patient on female ward who was having a seizure, and nothing they could do medically would stop it. So then the doctor and nurse in charge started to pray for the patient, and the seizure went away. And this student, who when she arrived told me straight that she didn't believe in God, came running up to me so excited about this story and what she had just seen God do. So I think, in fact, I'm pretty sure that here in Northern Ireland, doctors aren't allowed to pray for their patients. And I think as a result, we see a lot more miracles in Chuuk Hospital because we trust God and we really do believe in the hospital's motto that Jesus heals. Organizing the stays of our volunteers also gives me the great privilege of working alongside the housekeepers at the hospital. This is our very beautiful housekeeper, Harriet. While my responsibility is to find a good housekeeper for the volunteer, I soon realized that actually this is also a great opportunity to provide good employment for local girls in the area. For a young girl in Uganda who hasn't got the grades or financial backing to complete secondary education, there are very little opportunities for what she's going to do when she leaves school. So housekeeping is a common option. But this can be a very thankless job, and it often has poor working conditions and very little pay. But at Chuuk, we set a very high standard as to how our housekeepers are treated. We have a set rate of pay, and we give them all the benefits that all the staff at the hospital enjoy as well. They also get to attend hospital events, which can have a great effect on their lives. This next photo shows you a couple of our housekeepers, Hadija and Sarah. Hadija is the one in the black, and just last year she became a Christian. Hadija actually is from a Muslim background, so she hasn't told anyone in her family that she's become a Christian yet, because her husband is a very violent man. So I would ask that you remember Hadija and you think and pray for her, because she has a very difficult life ahead of her. So the next project that I'm involved with is our craft project. And this is for HIV-positive women in the area. It's an income-generating project, as it provides an income for the ladies, but also provides an income for the hospital as well. When our HIV department in the hospital was set up, the counsellors soon found that offering people life with HIV through treatment wasn't enough. And that people with HIV couldn't get work. They were stigmatized in their communities. And often they found that people weren't bothering coming to the hospital for treatment because they didn't see the point in their lives continuing. So the CRAFT project was set up to provide not just a source of income, but also to give these ladies the respect that they deserved and the community that they were craving. It has been a real joy and privilege for me to get to know these ladies, and I am constantly inspired by their resourcefulness, their work ethic, and their determination. Most of them are widows, bringing up countless children by themselves and having many other jobs on top of making these crafts. And so I'm just blown away by how much they can achieve. I would love to tell you a story about every single woman in the project, but I'll just tell you one. A few weeks before we came home to Northern Ireland, I had the craft ladies to my house for lunch. And I gave a short speech thanking them for all their hard work and for welcoming me into the group. And then one of the young girls, who is the youngest member of our group and newest, Agnes, who's just 16 years old, she stood up and she thanked me that in the 2 months since she joined the group, I had never been cruel to her, but I'd only been nice to her. And I was just left completely baffled. I thought, well, why on earth would I have been cruel to her? And it made me really wonder what kind of background Agnes had had. So I asked her the next week to tell me a little bit about her past. Agnes was born HIV positive, having contracted it from her mother through childbirth. She's no idea if her mom is still alive, because her father took her and her siblings away when she was still very little. But her father then died of AIDS, so she was brought up by her grandmother. But her grandmother lived near Chiwoko, so once a month, Agnes would come to the HIV clinic at the hospital, where we have for children, and she would get her drugs, and she would play games with the other kids, and she would get advice from the counsellors. And because she was an orphan due to HIV, her school fees were paid by one of our hospital donors. So it seemed actually that Agnes was going to have a good start in life. But one day when Agnes was in primary six, the teacher did a session on HIV. And she knew that Agnes went to Chiwoko Hospital for treatment. So she brought Agnes up to the front and got her to tell everybody about what happens at the clinics. Now all the kids knew that Agnes was HIV positive. They wouldn't sit beside her in class. They wouldn't play with her. Their parents wouldn't let them go near her. And unable to bear this kind of stigma, she dropped out of school. When her grandmother then became too old to care for her, Agnes was sent to Kampala to work as a housemaid. She was just 14 years old at this stage. The family that she worked for mistreated her, and in the end she ran away. She found her way back to Chiwoko and now lives with her uncle and his family. I asked her how they treat her, and she replied very cryptically that she is getting older, they're working out how to treat her. This family can only provide Agnes with shelter. They can't afford to buy her any of the things that a 16-year-old girl needs, like sanitary products or underwear or clothing. But because she left school in P6, she has no hope of getting a good job. And she fears to work as a housekeeper again. But thankfully, she re-registered with our hospital clinic. And a counsellor there recommended that she come along to our craft project. Agnes has been a complete pleasure to have in our group. She is a really keen learner. and she works hard to perfect the skills that she is being taught. I remember the first week she completed a small coin purse, and when I called her to come up and collect her pay, she stood up as only an African woman can, as though she'd just been announced that she'd won a prize, and all the other ladies were in stitches. But the most beautiful thing I've observed since Agnes joined the project is how all the other women have taken her under their wing. Agnes is half the age of all the other ladies in the group, and so they mother her like she's their own child. They invite her to their homes to teach her their particular skill, and they praise her work like a mother brags about her own child's achievements. I love to see that Agnes has finally found a place where she is safe and where people look after her. Paul and I thought the most important thing we were bringing to Uganda was our skills. But we've come to realize that what people are just desperately looking for is our love. And, you know, you don't need to be a mission worker in Africa to show love. I think every one of us is capable of sharing, of caring and showing love. And I believe that that is how people will see God in us.
So my job at the hospital, my role or title anyway, is site engineer. Nobody really knew what that meant. I still don't know what it means, but the hospital management just knew that there was a lot of problems on the engineering side, the non-medical side, so they wanted somebody to come over and have a look. So anyway, I started with medical equipment and IT because that's my background, and it wasn't long until I realized that most of the problems with equipment were related to the electrical supply and the cabling within the hospital. So I started looking at the electrical side as well. And then when we were getting parts from Kampala or different places, the vehicles kept breaking down. So the vehicles came into it as well. And then other things like water harvesting, which this isn't working. Yeah, water harvest. Hope you've all got your buckets out today because we would be collecting the water because tomorrow there wouldn't be any rain. And then building projects and basically anything else. I just kind of wander around seeing what's going on and help out in whatever way I can. Engineering's different in Africa. You're just an engineer. You're not a medical engineer or an electrical engineer. You just have to be able to fix everything. And I can't, but thankfully there's a great team there. The problems are different as well. We get animals building nests in where the electrical contactors are, and lizards crawl into machines and short circuit things out. This lizard's okay. He's called Brian. He lives in our back garden. One of the biggest problems is lightning. Uganda sees more lightning than almost any country in the world. And when lightning hits a building, because we've got iron roofs, lightning hits it and then travels through the electrical cabling and into the machines. So it's dangerous for the machines and also the people who are near the machines. During one storm last year, three members of staff who were in different buildings across the hospital were hit by lightning through their laptops because the lightning hit the building, traveled through the cabling into the laptop and blew up in front of them. So, yeah, there's a lot of work being done there. We're trying to put in lightning protection, but you can't really stop it. We'll try. So the engineers... Am I doing this or are you doing this? You are? I'll just put this down. Thankfully, at the hospital, we had two engineers. The first one, Innocent, he's been there like 20-something years. When I first met him, he came over to me and he said, "I'm Innocent." I said, "I'm sure you are." The other one is Tony. He's been there about 5 years. He's a qualified electrician, and he's unbelievable. But basically, these guys are incredible. They're the most dedicated guys. They work all hours, never ask for overtime. They're the best engineers I've ever worked with, anyway. So from the workshop, I could tell you a lot of stories. I'll tell you just the one. It's about a certain type of equipment. First of all, I'll go back to 2006. I started working for Philips Medical Systems, who work with X-ray equipment in hospitals here. And on my first day, I was working in Belfast City Hospital on a C-arm. This is a C-arm. This is a modern one. So basically, they use a C-arm in operating theatres to take X-rays when a surgeon needs to line something up within the body, like to fix a broken bone, to line the bone up. It gives them an idea of what's going on under the skin. And they would use it in cardiology, orthopedics, urology, lots of things. And then when we first arrived in Uganda in 2011, there was actually only one in the whole of Uganda that was working in any hospital. There was only one C-arm. But I found two in our store that had been there a couple of years, but not long after they arrived, they were destroyed by power surges. So I found them down in the old wood store. We brought them up to the medical workshop, the new medical workshop in the middle of the hospital, on the tractor, obviously. And we worked on them for 2 or 3 weeks. Now, one of them looked very similar to the one in Belfast City that I knew. So I kind of thought, right, we'll use the other one to fix it. So 3 weeks later, we got the machine working. And this is it in our main theatre. That's Tony standing beside it. So what was interesting was that this machine, it didn't just look like the machine from the city hospital. It actually was the machine. It had been shipped out there a couple of years before we were. On the hard drive, I found X-rays that I had taken in Belfast City 5 years before. So that was quite good. Now, the thing is, with these machines, the hospital can't afford to employ someone to operate it. So myself and Tony get to be radiographers. Here, you'd need a 5-year degree in radiography. But there, if you're an electrician and whatever I am, you get to go in surgery class. To protect the machine, to stop power surges and stuff, blowing it up again, we put in this blue box, which is a stabilizer backup system. And thanks to that machine, the machine's been working for 2 years. And the city thought it was finished. So in May this year, there was a young man, the guy on the left, called Rashid. He came to the hospital. He was in a car accident, and actually the three other people in the accident died. But Rashid came away with only a broken leg. I say only a broken leg, but it was a bad break. The femur, just above the knee, was completely broken, and his leg was basically hanging off. They'd taken him before they came to Choco, they'd taken him to different government hospitals, and they just didn't want to know they were going to amputate. So he knew a friend of mine, so he came to the hospital, and they tried lots of different things, setting the bone, putting pins in, didn't work. And they did consider amputation, but first they wanted to try putting a metal rod in the leg along beside the bone. It was an operation we've never tried in Choco before. So Rashid lay in a male ward for 2 months while we tried to find this metal bar, and eventually we got it. In June, just a week before we came home, we got a phone call from the theatre to come and operate the C-arm. So Tony and I went there. Now, I'll not explain why, but we had a video camera in the theatre. So I'm going to show you, not yet, I'm going to show you a bit of footage from there. If you're squeamish, don't watch it. But Tanya can watch it, and she's a vegetarian. go ahead. So this is about halfway through the operation. The iron rod, or the metal rod, has been inserted, and we were just taking some X-rays to see if the bar was in line before we put some screws through it into the leg, into the bone. You can see the duct tape holding the screens together at the top left. So at the time, the operation took about 5 hours. It was about 35 degrees, and we were wearing lead coats. It wasn't very pleasant, but it's good for a diet. Where are we? So, yeah, less than a week later, Rashid was able to walk around the ward with his Zimmer frame, and then we came home about that time. But we've just heard from one of the doctors that Rashid, there was an infection after the operation, but it cleared, and he's home, and he's doing well, and that's him with his dad. But the most important part of the story, the doctor told me that during his time at Choco Hospital, Rashid recommitted his life to God. About 5 years ago, he had converted from Islam to Christianity, but he wasn't really living the life. And it turned out that his whole experience in Choco, the visits from the mission team, the way the medical staff took care of him, and his experience of real Christianity in action helped him to come back to faith. And I think this story sums up Choco Hospital in many ways. It's an example of the holistic care, the meeting of physical and spiritual needs to whoever comes through the gates.
We're very aware that many of you pray for us while we're in Uganda, which we really appreciate. So we wanted to take an opportunity to share with you what we consider some of our main challenges there. You often hear a lot of reports in the press about how in other parts of the world Christianity is really growing, and often Africa is used as an example, as a very vibrant and alive church. Unfortunately, that is not what we are seeing in Choco. In Choco, we are seeing the spread of Islam. Choco as a town is now about 25% Muslim. It has a prominent mosque in the town centre that likes to wake us up every morning with its call to prayer at 6 a.m. Many of the staff that we work alongside are Muslim, although they are quite nominal in their faith. Unfortunately, this can also be said for the Christians, and so it would not be uncommon for a Christian to drop their beliefs and convert to Islam if the opportunity for a good marriage or good education came along. And actually, those two ways tend to be how Islam is winning converts in Africa. The first is that young Islamic men are encouraged to get Christian girls pregnant, and then they either get the girl to convert before they will marry her, or they simply take the baby away and bring it up as a Muslim. The second method is that a lot of money is coming in from rich Islamic nations to pay for the school fees of Muslim children. The charities that offer these funds make the stipulation that they have to be Muslim. And if you're a poor subsistence farmer with 11 children to try and put through school, claiming to be a Muslim seems a small price to pay. But as I'm sure you're aware and have heard, once you have converted to Islam, it's very hard to walk away from. The second big challenge that we see is witchcraft. It bemuses us how flippantly people in the West judge witchcraft. It seems like this fun and magical thing that's a perfect backdrop to kids' stories. But in Africa, we see the real harm that witchcraft can do in people's lives, particularly when it comes to healthcare, as witch doctors still hold a very strong influence over the local people in rural areas. In the hospital, many of our patients have come to us as a last resort, having already tried all the traditional healing remedies and bizarre treatments that their witch doctor has suggested. And it's only when they're at death's door that the witch doctor finally advises them to go to the hospital. But often this is too late, or it has left them needing a very costly treatment process that could have been avoided had they come to the hospital first. Of course, there are even more serious stories than this, with reports that child sacrifice is now on the rise in Uganda. And it is witch doctors that spread the rumour that sleeping with a virgin will cure you of HIV. Unfortunately, the third challenge that we have found is the church itself. It is really struggling to make an impact on these first two issues because it too has so many problems. From corruption and hypocrisy to a complete lack of training for its ministers, it is very hard to see a ray of hope coming from the church. It's like the church sees the moral problems of the society around it and chooses to concentrate on condemning those issues instead of offering the grace of God as a method for cleansing.
So as part of the mission team in the hospital, we've been trying to help combat these problems. The first thing is Bible study groups. We have our own nursing and lab school just beside the hospital. There's 160 nursing and lab students go there. And we'd realized that less and less of these students who come from all over Uganda are coming from a Christian background. And they suddenly find themselves in this Christian hospital that send out some very strange messages. So we wanted to share with these mostly teenagers in a small group atmosphere the core of Christianity and what it's all about. And it seems blatantly obvious to us that many Ugandan Christians need discipled. It's the same here. When we get back in January, I'm hoping to start a men's small group, starting with this group of new engineers. On the left, that's Tony. You've already met him. The other four have just started in the last couple of years. And one of these men, the one second from the left, is Ronnie. And he's a ray of hope in Uganda. He grew up in a very well-run Christian orphanage just down the road from the hospital. He's a strong Christian. He's very active in the local community, and he knows his Bible well, and his peers look up to him as well. So my idea is not to lead something, but to help men like Ronnie to lead something so that whenever we're not there, it keeps going. And I'd appreciate your prayers for that. The next thing is the pastors' conference. Now, to tackle the problem of bad teaching in the church, many years ago, the hospital set up the pastors' conference. In a Ugandan bush village, if you're able to read, you're given the role as pastor. So these men need training and support. This January's conference. And next slide. This is Shadrach and Nora praying for people. They're two legends. The hospital, they not only do the work in the hospital, they run a school of over 400 kids. They run Christianity Explored in the whole of Uganda. They head up this conference, and we're just privileged to be their friends and trying to help them out in any way we can. And in this conference, every year, it's actually ministers, pastors from Northern Ireland come to teach them, so I don't know if there's any pastors here. We'd like a wee trip out sometime. So off the back of that, the conference is Chioko Bible Institute. That's run from the hospital. And it's basically like a Bible college that any person can sign up to. Actually, our housekeeper enrolled this year, which is great. And it's just something you can enroll to learn more about the Bible and how to communicate it to other people. And many people we know have completed this course, and you can really tell the difference in how they understand the Bible and how they present it to other people. Prison ministry, I think, hopefully you heard a bit about it before. So it's another outreach of the mission team. Every other Sunday, we travel out to one of nine regional prisons within about 2 hours of the hospital. Just have to remember not to wear yellow. But one of the key men there is Godfrey. That's him preaching. Now, Godfrey actually got saved whenever our mission team visited the prison he was in years ago. And he got saved as a result, and Jesus transformed his life. And now he works as a driver at the hospital. He's a wife and lots of children. And he's an unbelievable testimony that he shares with the inmates of how God can transform their lives. And most of the guards recognize him and know him because he did a wee tour of the hospital or the prisons whenever he was an inmate. Basically in all that we're doing, we're trying to support the work of the Ugandans. We're there not to start new fancy things, but to encourage those guys and help them in any way that we can.
Often when we tell people we're working in a mission hospital, they assume that we're a doctor and a nurse. And to be honest, sometimes we find ourselves wishing that we were. It would sound so much more exciting. Our time in Uganda, though, has really made us think a lot about how in this world we judge people's importance. Depending on what job you do, or what gender you are, or how much money you have, or what part of the world you're from, or what gifts you have. And by these, we decide how important that person is in society. And we do it to ourselves as well. We look at those around us, and we judge ourselves according to them. And sometimes we put ourselves above them, and sometimes we put ourselves below them. Interestingly, the one who knows everything about us, and therefore could judge us and rank us most accurately, is the very one who tells us that no one is more important than another. I just want to share some scripture with you. I'm going to read from 1 Corinthians 12, so we're going to put it on the screen, from verse 12. The human body has many parts, but the many parts make up one whole body. So it is with the body of Christ. Some of us are Jews, some are Gentiles, some are slaves, and some are free. But we have all been baptized into one body by one Spirit, and we all share the same Spirit. Yes, the body has many different parts, not just one part. If the foot says, I am not a part of the body because I am not a hand, that does not make it any less a part of the body. Likewise, in the hospital, a cleaner or a cook is no less part of the treatment process than a doctor or a nurse. And likewise, in the Christian body, you have no less part to play in the work of God than the pastor or the overseas missionary. They continue in verse 16. And if the ear says, I am not part of the body because I am not an eye, would that make it any less a part of the body? And if the whole body were an eye, how would you hear? If your whole body were an ear, how would you smell anything? But all bodies have many parts, and God has put each part just where he wants it. How strange a body would be if it had only one part. Yes, there are many parts, but only one body. The eye can never say to the hand, I don't need you. The head can't say to the feet, I don't need you. In fact, some parts of the body that seem weakest and least important are actually the most necessary. And I'll just jump down to verse 27. All of you together are Christ's body, and each one of you is a part of it.
As I said earlier, Chogo Hospital has 375 members of staff. This is about a third of them, probably. It's very hard to get them all in the place, in the same place at the same time. About 40% of the 375 are not medical staff. They're the cleaners, the builders, engineers, water carriers, and farmers. We have a dairy farm down the road as well. Tanya and I both work with these non-medical people every day. And if you visit Chogo Hospital, these are the people you probably wouldn't even notice. The hospital is a community. It's a community where people of all sorts of abilities, all sorts of gifts and talents come together to help God make sick people well. If one part of the team or body doesn't do their job, Chogo Hospital will fall apart. And we think this is a great metaphor for church. As Christians, we should all have the same goal, to glorify God. And we do that when we use the gifts God has blessed us with to serve him. And as the Apostle Paul explains in 1 Corinthians, we've all been given unique gifts that complement and rely on each other. Unfortunately, in the church, we often see these gifts competing or being looked down on. But actually, they're all required for the body to function as God has intended. around the hospital, you'll see the motto on the walls. You can see it behind. We treat, Jesus heals. Now, we realized, working with the non-medical people, that they didn't consider themselves part of this. They think it's referring to the important people, the doctors, nurses, surgeons, not the drivers and the security men and the admin staff. So down at the workshop, I had a sign painted. We fix Jesus' heals. This was just to encourage the men down there to make them feel part of God's mission in the hospital. And it gave me the idea for something else. So we made a video that we're going to show you. We actually made this video for staff in the hospital, and we showed it to them before we came home. And we hope it also encourages you here. God.
We just wanted to finish by saying a really big thank you to Hamilton Road Baptist for all your support. I want to thank the church as a whole, but also to the individuals that send us letters and emails and very lovely chocolate parcels. We want to thank all those who give so generously towards buying us a vehicle. We want to thank you for all your prayer requests that you ask for, and to know that you are so diligently praying for us. We want to thank the sound men for tonight, but also for all the podcasts that we get to enjoy from Africa. And yeah, it just really means a lot to us to know that you're behind us, and we really couldn't do it without you. So thank you very much.